Well, today we have the opportunity to do another witness stand and hear another witness come forward to testify of the Lord's work in their life. And today we have the privilege of having Hans Vogt, who I'm pleased to see is here today. So Hans, if you want to come up. And those of you who've been here to see witness stands before kind of get the idea. We just I invite someone from the congregation to come up and basically be interviewed on just their life in general, but also their spiritual life in particular. So Hans, welcome. Good to have you here. Thank you for joining us. Have a seat.
Thanks. It's a different sitting up here, first.
Yeah, it's a little more comfortable, isn't it? So Hans, why don't you start by just telling us where it all began and when it all began. Go all the way back to the beginning. Genesis 1:1. No, not that far. Not that far. Your mic isn't on. Okay.
Is it on now? Whoa. Hi.
Yeah. I think it's on now.
Okay. Well, I was born June 23rd, 1970, in Manchester, Connecticut. And so that's where it began for me, anyway.
Mm-hmm. Manchester, that's like central Connecticut?
Yes. Yeah, my dad was a minister in Somersville, Connecticut, and so that's where we actually lived, but the hospital was in Manchester. So.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So your dad was a pastor, he's a minister?
Yes, he's a retired minister now at Congregational Church, so grew up in different churches in different parts of Connecticut.
Mm-hmm.
We lived in Somersville for, well, my first 4 years, and then we moved to Norwich for 4 years, and then we moved to Essex, the Iverton section, for 11 years. So I mostly grew up in Iverton.
So were you were able to find your family each time they moved?
Yes.
Okay, good.
They left breadcrumbs.
Okay. And how about your mom? Your mom worked outside the home?
Yeah, she was a school teacher, and she did, when I was growing up, she did substitute teaching.
Okay. And how about siblings?
I have one brother. He's 11 years older than I am, Richard. And he and his family live out in Cape Cod. He's actually an ordained Presbyterian minister.
Great.
I'm the rebel.
Yeah. So so Essex, Connecticut. I don't think I've ever been there, but I kind of get the impression it's one of those kind of idyllic New England towns with a common and a white church and bakery.
Several white churches, yeah.
Yeah. So a nice place to grow up.
It is. Actually, a few years ago, it was named the best small town in America. It's very nice. It's about 5,000 people. There's three villages, Essex, Centerbrook, and Iverton. Very little crime, just a really nice town, and best of all, it's got a steam train for tourists, steam train and riverboat ride that you can go on. That's, mm-hmm. For a boy, that's a pretty cool thing.
So you have family that still lives in Essex, or everybody's gone from there now?
My wife, her parents, when they're in Connecticut, they have a house in Connecticut. When they're not in Maine, they do live there, and most of Debbie's family is still in that area.
Mm-hmm.
My parents now live in a different part of Connecticut over by Waterbury.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. So tell us a little bit about your childhood. What was that like? Being a PK and all.
Being a yeah, that was fun.
That's pastor's kid for those of you who don't know that.
Well, we moved around a couple times. We moved to Iverton when I was in second grade. So I mostly grew up there, so that's what I think of as my hometown.
Mm-hmm.
Walked elementary school. Played in the woods behind the neighborhood where we lived in. There were quite a lot of woods and ponds and streams and so forth, so spent a lot of time playing back there. Once you get to junior high, the neighboring towns of Deep River and Chester and Essex joined together for junior high and high school. It's a regional school system.
Mm-hmm.
And so then you kind of expand the circle, but it's still very small. I mean, there's 500 kids in our high school I think my graduating class had like 120, mm-hmm. something like that. So yes. Still
so
pretty
that,
small.
That explains why they combined it.
Yeah.
There weren't that many to begin with.
Exactly.
So you'd mentioned something that happened in your town in the summer of 1982.
Oh, yeah.
You were not even a teenager at that point.
Yet. Right, sixth grade. We had a flood in our town in June of 1982. It had rained and rained and rained. I forget how many inches in 24 hours. It was a lot of rain anyway. And we have an Episcopal camp and conference center in our town, and which I later worked at when I was in high school. But they controlled the dam for their lake, and they were holding off because they had a group coming in from the city, and they wanted the lake to be there for the kids to swim. And they waited 1 hour too long, and the dam burst. Mm. And then every dam below it on the little river that ran through the town burst.
Yeah.
And so the flood just tore through the town, and it tore through our church. Our church was located right on a pond with a dam on this river. And the river went right through the basement of our church where all the Sunday school rooms were. And so that was pretty... You know, pretty traumatic experience.
Pretty traumatic for an 11, 12-year-old. Yeah. All right. So you went to a regional high school,
mm-hmm.
Valley Regional High School, and did you meet anybody special in the high school, perhaps?
As a matter of fact, I did. Yes, I met the love of my life, Debbie, in high school. She was a year behind me. When I really got to know her my senior year, I was in the play, the school play, and she was the stage manager. And so when I wasn't on stage, when I wasn't in that scene, I would talk with her behind the scenes. But at the time, we were both interested in different people. She was interested in the leading man in the play. I was interested in the leading woman in the play. So we got to know each other talking without any kind of pressure about, mm-hmm. Being interested in dating or anything. And then they had a Christmas dance, and we were each looking for that other person, and we backed into each other on the dance floor and turned around, and I said, well, do you want to dance? And they played three slow songs in a row.
That's because Debbie talked to the DJ ahead of time.
Actually, I was interested after that. Debbie still wasn't so sure. It was actually a couple months later after a basketball game I asked her out. And I didn't even know her mom was standing right there when I asked her out. And which is a good thing, really. And she said, well, I have to take a rain check. And, I was too dumb to take no for an answer, so I cashed the rain check. She finally went out with me. I guess they made her laugh enough to go out with me a second time. So,
good. Nice work, Hans. So high school was a good experience for you?
Yeah. Yeah, I played in the band and the jazz ensemble. I wrote for the school newspaper. My best friend and I had a humor column. For the school newspaper, I announced the football games. I played tennis. I was on the doubles for tennis, and it wasn't very good. And
that's why you had doubles.
That's right. That's right. And then also we had a thing in Connecticut called High School Bowl. I don't know if you're ever familiar with College Bowl, but it's like a trivia competition. And we play locally in our conference, and then they had a state tournament, which was on TV. And my senior year, we actually made it to the semifinals for the state. And so that was kind of fun.
Wow, that's cool. Way to go. So after high school was college. Tell us about your college days, where you went and mm-hmm. what it was like and what you studied, those kinds of things.
I went to Gordon College in Massachusetts, which is a Christian college. And had a wonderful time. I wasn't sure what I wanted to major in when I went there, actually, but I wound up double majoring in history and political studies. And and again, I was in the wind ensemble and jazz ensemble. Again, I played trombone. And, you know, I helped run the political club, politics club on campus. And I was in a Reader's Theater troupe, Prince Mary Reader's Theater troupe. And we did Murder in the Cathedral by T.S. Eliot. And we would travel around to different churches in New England and perform. And spring break, we did a tour out to Chicago and back. And then right after I graduated, we actually did a tour of England. And we did different churches in England. And I'll never forget, we performed in the chapter house of York Minster, which is the cathedral in York, England. And it was absolutely beautiful. And the stained glass windows in that chapter house tell the story of Thomas A. Becket, which is what the play is about. So it's kind of neat to be doing that play and then have the windows behind us doing the, you know, telling the same story. Mm-hmm. So it was a great experience.
Yeah, good. So 1992, does that year ring a bell?
Yes.
What happened in 1992? Not the whole year, just one particular thing.
Well, I got married. That was kind of a big thing. Mm-hmm. August 15th, 1992, Debbie and I got married. I had just gotten my master's in history from University of Connecticut, and she was still in college at UConn and for physical therapy. But we got married, and it was my dad did the wedding, it was a little bit of a rainy day, but we had a great time. We took a boat up the Connecticut River from Deep River to this yacht club that Debbie's grandparents belonged to, Patacock Yacht Club, and the reception was there at the clubhouse. And so it was kind of fun. Then we were kind of going up the river. The boat was decorated. You know, it said just married. And other boats were honking and waving at us. And
yeah,
it was kind of fun. And then we moved to Enfield. We lived in a museum, a historic house in Enfield, Connecticut, called the Martha Parsons House. And we lived there for 9 years. And it was rent-free. We just had to take care of the place and give the tours on Sunday afternoons, mm-hmm. for only half the year, and we got to live the first 9 years without paying rent or anything like that. It was really fantastic.
That's fantastic. So you moved to Enfield. Now I know you played baseball. Is that because you were dropping flies in the outfield? Is that what you mean? Never mind. Enfield. Never mind. Groan. So at some point you knew you were pursuing a career as a history professor, and that was it took some time for that all to sort out. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, well, I got my master's in history, MA in history, which is the most useless degree imaginable.
Right along with art history.
Yeah, it's just right up there, and then we got married, and so I worked for 6 months as an assistant manager at Things Remembered in the mall. the place that engraves things. I call it things that, you know, only sodium pentothal would make me remember. It's not a great experience.
Wow. That sounds really cynical.
But I went to work for a big bank in Hartford. I went through several names. It was Connecticut National Bank and Trust. Then it became Shawmut, and I don't know what it is these days. It's got bought out several more times. But I was an accountant for 2 years at a bank, which is proof that God has a sense of humor. Math is not my thing. But I hated it. I mean, it was, you know, the job paid pretty well, but, you know, it's not my area of giftedness at all. And then Debbie and I went up for homecoming at Gordon, and one of my history professors, Dr. Cole, said, have you ever thought about going back to grad school? And he said, I need to nominate somebody for the Pew Younger Scholars Program, and I'd like to nominate you if you would go back to high school. Graduate school.
Yeah. Thanks for that clarification.
Go back to high school. Yeah. So, So I did. So I applied to graduate schools, and I did not wind up getting the Pew Fellowship. I was a finalist, but I didn't get it. But it kind of was the impetus for me to go back to University of Connecticut and to the doctoral program.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. So that accounting experience pretty much solidified in your mind that that was not going to be your long-range plan.
Right.
Okay. So children along the way, perhaps?
Yeah, eventually. I got my doctorate in 2001, and Debbie and I moved out to Elgin, Illinois, which is outside of Chicago. I got a one-year teaching job at a small Baptist college there called Judson.
Mm-hmm.
And while we were out there, we had our first child, our daughter, Jacqueline. She was born in May of 2002. But it was a one-year appointment, and they hired somebody else for the tenure track job, so I put out dozens of applications and got nothing. Mm-hmm. And so after graduation was all over, I basically had a newborn child and no job and nowhere to live. And so I was kind of getting a little concerned. Debbie wasn't. Debbie had more faith than I did. But I had made arrangements that we could live with with Debbie's parents, and I lined up a couple of adjunct teaching jobs, and I said to her, well, give me a year to try to find something, and if I can't, then you go to work. I mean, she'd make far more money than I would anyway as a physical therapist, and I'll stay home. And then three colleges contacted me the same day for interviews, and all three wound up offering me jobs. One was a little college out in Iowa Wesleyan. One was a community college in Benton Harbor, Michigan, and one was Ulster County Community College. Benton Harbor actually offered me more money, but I wound up going to Ulster because we wanted to be back east because that's where all our family was.
Mm-hmm.
And all our friends were. It wound up being a good choice on many levels, but a couple of months later, Benton Harbor erupted in race riots, and they were burning things down, and I thought, oh, wow. You know, it would not a place you'd want to be with a small child and, you know, be in that situation. So
you came to SUNY Ulster when? What year was that?
August of 2002.
2002, okay. Mm-hmm. So that's 12 years. You've been there for 12 years. Okay. So tell us about your spiritual journey. I know that you'd shared with me when you were a child, you did sort of the camp thing, Bible camp, summer camp. Tell us, and it had a lot of influence on you. So tell us about that.
Sure. Well, obviously I grew up in the church, kind of lived in the church. That's, you know, when you're a PK, that's what you do. So I can't remember ever not believing in God. I never, never doubted it. You know, never questioned it really. Mm-hmm. We would go up to Camp of the Woods and Speculator on vacation, and when I was 12, I sort of officially, made a decision when I was at Camp of the Woods.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that I didn't believe before that, so it wasn't any kind of dramatic, you know, Damascus Road type thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was more just acknowledging, okay, you know, I'm acknowledging what I already believe, but I'm going to be serious about this, and this is, you know.
Yeah. I think that's probably typical for people who grow up in a Christian home, that you can be sort of lulled into thinking, well, I'm a Christian, I was born that way. But there does come a time where it has to be personalized.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't always remember exactly when it was, but we can look back and say, well, I know that before that I was not a believer, and I know after that I was, even if we don't know the mm-hmm. day and the hour. So that was part of your childhood. Now at some point, you grew up in a Christian family. Your father was a pastor, so mm-hmm. you were PK and around the church all the time. I know what that's like. And so your church was kind of your home.
Mm-hmm.
In many ways, it was your home. But then something happened along the way where your church was anything but mm-hmm. your home. Tell us about that.
Sure. Yeah, it really is. I mean, when you're, you know, Congregationalists, we don't call each other brother and sister the way, you know, less uptight denominations do. So, but it's your family. I mean, it's, and I think even more so when you're a PK. And twice, my dad was kind of forced out of churches. First, the Taffel Church when I was 7 or 8, and then Iverton when I was in college. And so both times it was, you know, very upsetting because it's kind of like your family is disowning you. You know, the first time in Taffel, the people kind of leading the charge to get rid of Dad were, you know, the people who taught my Sunday school class. And it's like, you know, well, wait a minute, you know, here you are, you're my Sunday school teacher, and yet you're trying to get rid of my dad. I mean, that was kind of weird. And then the second time in Iverton, I mean, by that point, you know, obviously baptized, confirmed, you know, I was a deacon, we don't have elders, we have trustees, but this is kind of the same thing. Mm-hmm. So I was very active, and then, you know, this all kind of blew up, and around that same time, my grandmother died, and my brother moved to Cape Cod, and so there's a lot of things going on, a lot of changes, and I'm not proud of this, and I don't recommend doing this, but I can picture standing on the cellar steps and yelling out loud at God, because I was just so angry, and just saying, I'm done. You know, that's it. This is what you get for serving you, then forget about it. You know, I'm not doing it anymore. And so I didn't stop going to church. I mean, all through college, I went to church and so forth. But I just, you know, I put in my hour a week, you know, kind of punched the clock there. I went to chapel at Gordon and stuff. But I wasn't going to do any more than that because I was just, yeah. I was fed up.
You were finished, so your heart wasn't in it. And it largely stemmed from how you felt betrayed
right.
by your family, which, you know, your right. church family. So you kind of carried that with you for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And then you moved, again, you said you moved to Enfield in
right.
1992. And you started attending a Presbyterian church there?
Right.
What was that about?
It's very similar to Congregational.
I know.
And it's a great, and we still go back there and visit. And, it, you know, it, one of the things we really liked about that church was they were not afraid to try different things. In fact, the first Sunday I was there, they had a puppet ministry. Their teen group had a puppet ministry. So they still do. And so the first Sunday I'm there, the puppets are in the middle of the service doing a Petra song. Petra's an old school Christian rock group for you younger people. And so they're doing a Petra song with a smoke machine.
The puppets.
Yes. It was way cool. I mean, it was kind of like... all I can think of is the line in the first Muppet movie. They don't look like Presbyterians to me. but it was great. So we got involved and so forth. And then I was there, it was less than 2 years. We hadn't joined the church or anything yet. And one of the ladies in the church called me up to give me this sales pitch about helping out with Junior Church, which is basically like Hosanna
Kids. Yeah.
And I was getting so mad. I was thinking to myself, well, here we go. Right, I've only been here a year and a half, and now you're going to rope me in and get me doing all this stuff. No way, I'm not doing that. It's not going to happen. And so I'm getting madder and madder as she's talking, and when she finally gets to, you know, saying, so what do you think? I'm all set to say no, and the word yes popped out of my mouth. And I literally hung up the phone and said, what did I do that for?
Who said that?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so things were obviously getting better. And then you went, I think this is strategic, you went on a retreat at that time where your dad was actually one of the speakers, maybe the
yes.
main speaker.
Yeah, it wasn't right after that. It was a couple of years later. I'm not sure the exact timeline. But yes, and Dad was sharing some of the stuff that had happened in the Ironton Church connected to the flood. Because God really did some miraculous things there. The church had, I mean, this was a small, did we ever have 100 on a Sunday, Dad? I don't think so. I mean, this was a small church, a struggling church, certainly not a wealthy church. Once in a while.
Okay. Banner days.
Yeah. And so, you know, when the flood came, it's like, well, how are we ever going to pay for this to fix all this up? And they voted to go ahead and do it anyway without any clue of where the money was going to come from. And literally right after they voted to do that, the phone call came saying, hey, here's the money. Mm-hmm. And then the Mennonite Disaster Service came and they did the work. So Dad was talking about all that good stuff that happened there. And that's all he was talking about. And as he's talking, I am just shaking with rage. Because I'm not thinking about that stuff. I'm thinking about what came after that. Mm-hmm. And after he got done talking, we kind of, each table kind of got together to talk a little bit. And I just broke down crying, and I just had to confess to my brothers at the table. And it really surprised me. I mean, up until that point, I would have told you I had forgiven the people in that church ages ago. And so it was a shock to me to find out I hadn't forgiven him at all. Mm-hmm. Or at least on one level, I hadn't at all.
Yeah. So that was really a defining moment. And then things began to, your involvement in church and the people and ministry began to blossom again.
I was an elder. I was a deacon. I was teaching Sunday school. I was,
Mm-hmm. And then eventually... You came to Grace Church.
Mm-hmm.
That was in what year was that?
Oh boy!
I think you said it was in 2008.
I think yes, 2008. Yeah.
Which was the year after we moved into this building. So you were never in the old building.
Well, we were in it once or twice.
Okay.
Actually, Jackie used to go to the youngest
Pioneer Girls?
Youngest level of Pioneer Girls. Mm-hmm. I forget what the name for that was, and we came a couple times for different programs at the old church. So mm-hmm. we had been here once or twice. We certainly knew about it. We knew a bunch of Grace people. Debbie was in MOPS.
Mm-hmm.
So,
okay. So 2008, that was the year after we moved into the building, and it was a year before the great flood of 2009. We had our own
flood. Yes.
Yeah, by the way. So you became a believer at some time in your childhood. On your spiritual journey, what's kind of the big thing that you've learned? If you can kind of condense it down to one primary thing you've learned, to put you on the spot.
Yeah. I really think forgiveness. As I was growing up, you go through Sunday school and you go through all the Old Testament and New Testament, and you read all the stories and so forth, and there seems to be a pattern where, okay, if you obey God, then there's blessing and you win the battles and things go well, and if you disobey, then things don't go well and so
mm-hmm.
forth.
Mm-hmm.
And I think part of why I reacted the way I did, to what happened in Ironton was like, okay, well, so we're obeying you, so why aren't, where's the blessing? Why isn't,
where's the payoff?
Right, 2 + 2 wasn't adding up to 4. But realizing the power of forgiveness that, even in a church, people are still going to hurt you. They're still going to say and do stupid things and bad things, and it's not, you're not in heaven yet. And so you can either let that destroy your faith, or you can say, well, I do the same thing. I mess up, I make mistakes, I say and do stupid things too.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times, the people who hurt you, they don't even know they hurt you. they're not even aware that you took what they said or did in the way that you did. And so they may never apologize. And that doesn't matter. You have to forgive them anyway.
Yeah.
Because the only person you're punishing by not forgiving them is yourself, really.
Right. Yeah. You need to decide what you're going to do with that. So as we've done previous witness stands, one of the more common themes is that people have grown up with rather turbulent experiences. And many of them didn't even become believers until adulthood and went through a lot of tragedies and disappointments and everything. And your situation is such a contrast to that, growing up in a Christian home, Christian parents, Christian values, church, camp, all those kinds of things, and a pastor's kid to boot. So can you cite any downside to growing up in a Christian home?
No.
Okay, that's kind of the answer.
What do you think I'm going to answer?
Yeah, that's kind of the answer I expected. And, you know, God's grace is real in every person's life, mm-hmm. but I think it's interesting to contrast it to those who didn't grow up in that kind of home and didn't learn those values and didn't understand what the Bible taught and didn't become a believer relatively early in life, and all of the heartache and all of the pain and all the disappointment and all the failures that come their way just because of that. And so I get the impression that you appreciate, as I appreciate and many here appreciate, the legacy mm-hmm. of growing up in that kind of home and the things that we learn and experience and the things that we're able to avoid because
right.
of that.
Right.
So,
absolutely.
Yeah. So church was first your home, then it was your enemy, and then it became your home again.
Mm-hmm.
And this is now your church home.
Right.
And we're glad.
I'm glad
both,
too. It's
both
great.
For you and Debbie and Gordon and Jackie as well. So I want to thank you for being on the witness stand today. And can I pray?
Sure.
Before we end? All right, let's pray. Our Father, thank you for Hans and his life and his experience and his testimony. And again, it just rings so clearly what it can mean in the lives of people to be raised with a solid foundation. Not that that's a guarantee. Many are, and still their lives become very tumultuous and uncertain. And yet we don't want to minimize the value of that good foundation. And I pray that you would encourage parents even here today who are in that and on that journey even now, teaching their children timeless values, incorporating a biblical truth and worship and being involved in a church family as part of their young lives, teaching them week by week, month by month. I pray that you would encourage them in that process and help them to be committed to it more and more with the passing of time, and that you would encourage them in that commitment. So thank you for Hans's experience and that he is a believer in Jesus Christ, that his life has reflected that commitment and his love of the Lord. And I pray that you'd continue to bless him and his family in their endeavors and continue to bless us as a church through this family as they worship with us and grow with us and fellowship with us and serve among us. And we ask it in Jesus' name. Amen.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.